She was kind of ready to go then. We think about sometimes with regard to growing old as things kind of being over, don't we? I mean, we by the time we get to starting to think about 60s, 70s, and 80s, which is where we're going to kind of plug in today, we tend to think, wow, you know, what's it going to be like when I get there? And will I start kind of downturning a little bit? You know, will I be able to do things productively? And we're going to talk about some of those issues today. Now, we're going to start today off by the exercise we did last week. I'm just trying to see the demographics and let you proudly display your generation. So everybody here in their 20s and 30s, all right, if you would, I want you to stand up. Everybody in your 20s and 30s, stand up, just like we did last week, okay? All right, let's hear it for our youngins. Yeah, that's good. We're here for our youngins. All right, 20s and 30s, you guys and girls, sit down, all right? Now, let me have our 40s and 50s, who we talked about last week. We had a message for you. Yeah, that's us. Woo, that's us right there. I hear you, baby. That's us right there. You are the reason for the balloons. I want you to know that, 40s and 50s, okay? All right, y'all have a seat. Let me get a look at everybody in their 60s and above. If you're in your 60 and you're above, stand up, hold it, stand up. Nothing to be, yeah, we honor you. It's a wonderful thing. Yeah, so today we're talking about how the rest of us should be listening to those of you who just stood up, all right? And so we're going to give you guys and girls some credibility here. There was a story of this man who he said he had his quote, and he said, "You know, I've sure gotten old. I've had bypass surgery, two of them, a hip replacement, new knees. I've fought prostate cancer and diabetes. I'm half blind. I can't hear anything quieter than a jet engine. I take 40 different medications that make me dizzy, winded, and subject to blackouts. I have bouts with dementia. I have poor circulation. I hardly feel my hands and feet anymore. I can't remember if I'm 85 or 92. I've lost all my friends, but thank God I still have my driver's license." So, anyway, that's a bright side in a lot of different things. You know, we kind of close down this message series that we've been in the last 3 or 4 weeks, which, by the way, has been called. Does anybody want to see if you can do better in the first service? This message series. A couple of you got it. Man, you guys don't know how to make a pastor feel very good sometimes. But the seasons of life, we're kind of winding down, and we're looking at this time, the later years, and we're calling this message today, Lasting Legacy. Will there indeed be a lasting legacy? And that's one of the big issues that kind of come to play at this stage of life. And as we move into this message today and kind of out of this series, and we're going to begin one next week on Easter Sunday, and I want you to hear me out. We're beginning one next Sunday that is called Facing Forever. What the Bible says about heaven, hell, the angels, and the afterlife. Now, why are we doing? So we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, the next life, if you will, right out of this message series. But that's kind of a different kind of a long message series title, isn't it? But one of the things we're doing, people are curious, outside seekers, people who are not yet in church, are curious about things like heaven. They're curious about hell. They're curious about what it's going to be like after I die. They're curious about angels. You know, many of us in the church, we kind of take that for granted, because those of you who've been in church for a long time, we forget what it was like to not be in church. You hear what I'm saying? And that's not a slam on you, but I am slamming you, okay? Me too, because I'm just like that. Those of us, once we've been in church for a while, we forget what it's like to not be in church. And so I really want to encourage you over the next 6 weeks or so to really use this message series title as something that you can leverage to kind of invite people and people, because the seats around you, and we'll have our air conditioning fixed in plenty of time, I'm sure. But, you know, don't worry about more body heat in here. Just y'all, some of y'all come to the early service and we'll be all right. But, you know, we need to fill these seats. And you know, God said, you know, through Jesus, he said, you know, compel them to come in. Compel those who don't know me, who don't have a relationship with me, to come in. Now we go and relate to them where they are, don't get me wrong, but there are multiple fronts of our reaching people, going to where they are, but also inviting them to come back to be with us. So I encourage you as over the next few weeks to really use this message series to kind of leverage your opportunity to give invitations to other people. Well, let's talk about the 60s, first of all. I'm referring to the 60s as the third quarter of life. We talked about last week, we talked about halftime a lot, didn't we? We recognized that the 40s and 50s was a time of a lot of adjustments, that there were many opportunities during those two decades of life to kind of look back and reflect a little bit and either get depressed about it or to really use the lessons from life so far to kind of steer and guide us with regard to where we're going in the future. So today I want to look at the third quarter, which is that period of time known as the 60s. And I want us to look, starting out at a verse that Solomon gives us in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 10. He says, "Don't long for the good old days, for you don't know whether they were any better than today." Now, can we be honest for a minute? How many of us have these thoughts at times when we say, you know, gosh, I wish things were like they were back when da 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 da. You ever get that way? Yeah, let's be honest. Yeah, do we? Yeah. You know, for some of you, we did two songs today that came from a little bit different decades, but you know, were there memories associated with those songs even before you heard our band play them in a church context? Were there? Sure. Oh yeah, I remember Rare Earth. I mean, that was one of my all-time favorite songs. And all of us, we tend, our music, the music that we like is a good example of this. We tend to really dig into the music that was popular when we had a certain phase of life going on. For most of us, it was those formative years, maybe the teenage years and maybe the 20s perhaps. For me, it was back even into my pre-10-year-old years. I remember that's the music that I know best when I was like anywhere from like 6, 7 and up. And that's what I still enjoy today the most. So music, I think, is a way, gives us a context from which to look at this particular verse. So Solomon says, look, don't worry about the good old days. Now, keep in mind, the life that Solomon lived was one in which, as he was looking back, he probably had a lot of regrets. Solomon was indeed perhaps the richest man who ever lived. He may have also been the wisest man who ever lived. He was probably the greatest womanizer who ever lived. I don't know if greatest womanizer, but you know, the worst womanizer, maybe that's what I should say. I mean, he had 700 wives. Can you imagine that? Of course, that means he had 700 mothers-in-law too. And so it couldn't have been all that good. But anyway, he was a guy who, as he got to the latter part of his life, he was looking back and he had a lot of things that he wanted to tell people. He said more than once, multiple times in the book of Ecclesiastes, he made statements like this: all is vanity. Life is meaningless. So it's kind of like the most depressing book in the Bible, but it's also at the same time one of the more life-giving books in the Bible simply because of the wisdom that it offers. So don't long for the good old days, for you don't know whether they were any better than today. Enjoy life, folks. Enjoy life as it is today. A few weeks ago, as we kicked off this message series, we looked at Ecclesiastes chapter 11. And for those of you who were in that first group who stood up, I want to refresh your memory on a verse that we read on that day in Ecclesiastes chapter 11. And if I can find it, there it is. It goes like this: young man, it's wonderful to be young. Enjoy every minute of it. Do everything you want to do. Take it all in, but remember that you must give an account to God for everything you do. Solomon himself says, life is to be enjoyed. Parents, I think we want our kids to enjoy life, don't we? You know, I had a situation just this weekend where one of my kids, we gave him some chores to do. Well, an opportunity came up for them to do something that they would really enjoy. And so we kind of had a little negotiation session to say, okay, you can get your chores done, you know, as long as you get them done by Monday, you can go and do this. You know, why did I do that? Because that verse was popping through my mind. Enjoy life while you're young. Now, that doesn't mean we spoil our kids. You got that, parents? Even though, no matter what I say on that, you're going to spoil them anyway. A lot of us are going to. And I'm not saying let your kids rule the house. Many of us, our homes are already beyond that stage. So many of you parents, you got to get your home back, because your kids are the ones who are running you, and not the other way around. Okay, but you know, be that as it may, God wants us to enjoy life. He wants us to really understand what it's like and to help each other enjoy it. So what are the issues that come up in the 60s? Well, three categories of thoughts and questions that typically might come up in the 60s. And we're going to go over those real quickly. Follow along with me. We're going to move rather rapidly today. The first of those issues is the issue of capacity. Capacity. Now, what is capacity? Capacity is basically the ability the ability to get something done. What capabilities do I really have? My capacity as an individual would be comprised of the sum total of all of my abilities, all of my giftedness, and everything that I'm good at doing. And there's a certain level of results that God expects from me because of the capacity that He gave me. Does that kind of make sense? And as age moves on down the line, you might say, the questions of capacity become probably more frequently. Now, let's look at Isaiah, what he said as God speaks through the prophet. He says, He, talking about God in Isaiah 40, gives power to those who are tired and worn out. He offers strength to the weak, however. Even youths will become exhausted and young men will give up. But those who wait on the Lord will find new strength. They will fly high on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. Now, what's a couple of things we can notice about that verse there? Isaiah is talking about the fact that everyone who chooses to ask the Lord will find new strength, no matter their age. As a matter of fact, what he does, he even makes a little caveat statement in here. He says, even young people, youths, even young ones, 20s, teens, 30s, are going to get exhausted at times. Everybody has their limits, he says. But no matter the age, if you just kind of just hang and ask God, hey, you know, I need your strength, God, He will renew no matter what age. Now, there are different ways that He renews us at different ages, at different stages of life. And we'll go through that in a couple of minutes. So what are the questions that come up with regard to capacity in the 60s? Here's a few questions. When do I stop doing those things that have always defined me? Okay, I want you to think for a minute. Just take about 10 seconds and answer this question. What is it that you do that defines you the most? And write it down on your outline. Just the very first thing that pops into your mind. Don't try to analyze it. Just the very first thing that comes into your mind. What is the thing that you do that defines you the most? There may come a time when you ask the question, how long am I going to be able to continue doing that? For some of us, that question may already be here at this point. Here's another question. Do I have enough time left to do all the things that I've dreamed about? Can I talk to you a minute about your dreams? Your dreams may be the most powerful gift that God ever gave you. Your dreams, the things that you really want to do, things that are so big, and things that it may at times seem to be so unattainable, may in fact be the greatest gift God's given you. Your dreams are there to motivate you. Your dreams are there not to frustrate you, but here's what many of us do. We allow our dreams to frustrate us. How? Because you know what we say? Well, I can never do that. I'll never be able to have the money to do that, or I'll never be able to carve out whatever time to do that, or my kids will never be da-da-da so that I can do that. And so, you know, we get into a life of a rut, all right? And our dreams, rather than being a source of motivation, become a source of frustration. Because we don't want to do what we need to do. We don't want to pay the price that it takes for the dreams to be realized. What are the barriers to your dreams? First of all, many of us, we stopped dreaming years ago. We stopped. Why? Because something hurt at some point in time. Because something happened. And you know what? The dreams that we had went poof, pop, just like one of these balloons might do. But God wants you to dream. Big question in the 60s is, will I have time to do those things I've dreamed about? Get help from other people. I have a coach who works with me to help me work on my dreams. I now have a financial planner who I've turned all of my finances over to, because I recognize that at 47 years old, I'm going to be asking this question in the not too distant future. And I don't want to pass on my dreams. There are people who can give you help and advice and counsel and help move you forward with regard to your dreams. Our Life Vision Workshop is one of those things that Chuck and I just completed this past Tuesday night. And we're going to be offering another one of those in the near future. That was a very successful venture. And we're going to see some pretty cool things come out of that, I believe. Here's the second area of questions, or the second category of questions that come about at this time. Mortality. This is the second time we begin thinking about mortality. I call it mortality 2. Because we're asking mortality questions. And again, in chapter 7 of Ecclesiastes, a wise person thinks much about death, while the fool thinks only about having a good time now. Now, unless you're really kind of weird, death is not something that you really like to think about real often. True? Right? How many of us at times we are more likely to suppress thoughts about death than we are likely to enable them? Which are you? Are you like me? I'm more likely to suppress them. Absolutely. But yeah, and we don't want to think about those things because it's unpleasant. But well, the Bible says that those who think about it are wise. Now, why is that? Because we've got to make preparation. We've got to figure out what's going to happen after I leave. You know, it happens. You know, let's face it, unless the Lord returns, and He may, before in our lifetime, we are probably, most likely, each and every person in this room going to experience death at some point in time. By the way, you know, do you realize that every version of the church, okay, from the early New Testament church, everyone from all generations, all the Christians have always expected Jesus to return during their lifetime. And I've known Christians who have just kind of hung their hat on that, and they've just kind of like, okay, I'm going to let life happen to me because surely the Lord's going to come back. And guess what? Hadn't happened for 2,000 years yet. Now, He will. And He may do it during our lifetime, but I tell you what, I don't think He wants us banking on that. He wants us living our lives as if we're going to live it out to the fullest until the very end. So what are some of the questions that we come up with during this time? Here's a couple. Why am I so interested now in the obituaries? Why am I interested in how they died and what kind of lives they lived? Somebody came up to me after the first service. She said, Bud, she said, you know, my mother, I don't get the paper, but she gives me the paper every week, you know, and everyone, and you know what? The section she gives me every week in a bag is the one with the obituaries in it, you know. And you know, that's kind of what we do. We're thinking about, you know, who are, because guess what? There comes a time when we recognize that some of the people who are there are the people that are my age. There are people there who I know. And you know, that's the way to find out news about my friends. And so we begin to get interested about, not that it's a bad thing, it's not, it's the way it is. Here's another one. Who will be around me when I die? Who will be around me when I die? Many of you have had to have been the answer to that question for other people who have died in your family and your circle of friends. Which one of us, for couples, this is which one of us as couples will go first? Which one of us will go first? Now, guys, can I talk to you for a minute? Chances are it's going to be us. We're going first. You might as well bank on it, guys. You're going to die before your wife. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm saying in all probability, it will happen. So what are the implications? What are we doing to make sure that they are well? I'm not saying taken care of. I'm saying well taken care of, okay, after my death. What am I doing to provide for them and my children and my grandchildren after my death? So these are questions that are very important. Here's another one. What will it be like to say goodbye to someone with whom I've shared so many years of my life? Wow. You know, I don't like that, the idea of that question. There's a third category of questions that come in the 60s typically, and that has to do with waning confidence. Confidence begins to deteriorate a little bit the older we get, if you haven't really noticed. In Hebrews chapter 6, the writer was trying to encourage the church about God's promises and about the unbreakability of those promises. And so he says, God has given us both His promise and His oath. These two things are unchangeable because it is impossible for God to lie. Therefore, we who have fled to Him for refuge can take new courage, for we can hold on to His promise with confidence. Here's some questions that we typically have at this stage of life. Are the things that I have believed in really capable of taking me through to the end? Even spiritual things. Have you noticed sometimes that people tend to talk about spiritual things the older they get? Many people do that. You know, many of us, I know that it's happened with a lot of older people that I've been around. They talk about God a whole lot more. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, they're thinking that, you know, hey, this reality here is going to be that I'm going to experience that at some point in time. Well, here's another thing. What do I regret in life? What do I regret? We should live our lives today so that we will have no regrets at the end. And you know when the best time is to start living that way? Right now. Right now. Okay? You see, those of you who have not reached that 60, 70, 80s or not quite there, what we're talking about today, you can do so much to make sure that the answers to these questions are going to be pleasant answers. Answers that are going to be pleasing to God. What are my major satisfactions? What are my major satisfactions? What are the things that have really gone right for me that I have really felt good about in my life? What can I look back on with pride? I'm not talking about a sinful pride. I'm talking about a pride with saying, you know, hey, you know, I was able to contribute there. I was glad to be a part of that. Well, that's kind of the 60s. We get into the 70s and the 80s, and I'm kind of calling this time the home stretch. Because typically, once we get to this particular age group, we really begin, I think, recognizing that, hey, we're heading on toward the fourth quarter. We really start asking the questions about how many years do we have left. And I want you to look at what he said again in verse 8 of chapter 7. Finishing is better than starting. Patience is better than pride. Now, let's take that first sentence for a minute. How many times have you tried to start something that would take a while to accomplish? Okay? Now, you don't know the answer to that, because for many of us, we have no idea. It's happened time and again. Now, how many of those things that we have pledged to finish and we actually did start them, did we really finish? I would love for us to have a personal metric or a statistic that tells us in our own lives, how many times the percentage of times that we've started something that we actually completed them. Now, here would be a good homework question for you this week. Guess, what would your completion percentage be? I'm not talking about Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. I'm talking about you and me. What is my life's completion percentage? The things that I set out to do that I wound up finishing. Because the writer of Ecclesiastes says, what? Finishing is better than starting. Now, what does that say? That says, look, if you don't plan on finishing something, don't even think about starting it. If you're going to get married and you don't have a plan for making that permanent and you're not really committed to it, look, don't even go there. Don't even start it. Don't go to some job if you look at it just as something to get you over the hump until you can get to something else. Don't try to make a spiritual commitment that you're going to do all this stuff, God says, for me, if you're not really serious about it. You see, I've been in this business long enough to know that when somebody in the church tells me they're going to do something spiritually, I'm happy for them and I'm encouraging, but you know what? I don't celebrate. Because the celebration can only come when we see that what is started is finished or that it is going to be finished. You see the point? And by the same token, I have become more guarded with my words because I have so often stated things that I was going to start and I wound up pooping out, you know? And so God wants us to understand this truth that finishing is better than starting. What are some of the issues that we see in the 70s and 80s? Here's the first one, significance. Am I significant? I love this verse, Proverbs 20:29. The glory of the young is their strength. The gray hair of experience is the splendor of the old. Now, those of you who have gray hair, guess what? That's a sign of your splendor. If that's the case, why do we try to hide it so much, huh? Now, many of you don't. But some people come to, some person come to me, well, I started graying at 16. I say, well, okay, well, I understand that one, you know. But you know, the gray hair is the splendor of those who have more experience. Now, when we one of the things I teach when I work with churches is one of the key things they need to do in their congregation is to figure out among their people who falls in each of three categories. The first category is the dreamers. Okay, those are the people who dream big. They have big picture view of the world, and I'm one of those, and there are a few others in our church like that. The second group of people are the developers, all right? We'll get back to the minute. The third characteristic, the third group of people are the doers. They're the ones who can really make it happen. Dreamers are dead without doers, all right? Does that make sense? Because and they just got to have them. Now, the problem, though, is that doers can become very, very frustrated with dreamers. Do you know what I'm saying? Sometimes you hate them, right? I mean, they talk my language. You know, well, how are we going to do this? Well, I don't know. I just know that it's something we need to do, you know. Something needs to happen. Well, you know, here's what happens as we kind of progress through life a little bit. We understand that early on in life, we're doing a lot of stuff. Now, in my little three-stage scenario, the developers are the people who can translate between the dreamers and the doers. They're the ones who take my dreams, for example, and couch it in a way so that it can be put into action. Now, the developers are those people who work with people to build the people themselves who are actually performing the task. Now, as we progress through life, what happens? A lot of times we move from being doers because we're busy. And as we get a little older in the 70s and 80s, 60s, 70s and 80s, we got to begin thinking ourselves more as developers of others. Maybe we're not doing quite as much. As a matter of fact, because our physical bodies are not quite what they once were, God doesn't want us to stop and slow down. He doesn't want us to stop using energy. He wants us to do what? To rechannel the energy. All right, to rechannel it into more of an emotional and mental kind of thing where I invest in other people. That's where my energy goes. I think that so many people, as they get old, they get depressed because they don't see that transition in life. I think those who age with the most grace are those who understand that their role becomes more of a mentor, more of one who can invest in the lives of others and show them how to do things and do them well. So let's move through this section really quickly. What are some of the questions that come along with this issue of significance? Number one, does anyone realize or care who I once was? Because, you know, the people that I knew, either maybe they're too old now or maybe they're not around anymore. Here's another question that comes in the 70s and 80s. Is my story important to anyone? You know, sometimes at this age, it's more difficult to find people who are willing to listen to the story. Yeah, I'm hearing stories, you know, that I never heard before from my parents as they get older. It used to be that they would share those stories with their contemporaries. But guess what? There are not as many of them around anymore. And so they try to find other people to share them with. Here's another one. Is there anything I can still contribute? See, this is where the transition from doer to developer is very important. Because in this other area of life, which is independence, or this other area of questions that come in the 70s and 80s of independence, Paul said in 2 Corinthians 4, he said, that is why we never give up. Though our bodies are dying, look at this, our spirits are being renewed every day. Circle that if you got an outline and you got your penciling stuff in. Circle that phrase. Though our bodies are dying, our spirits are being renewed every day. This verse gives us the key to understanding the need for our energy to transition. All right? We transition from being using our physical bodies, and we move toward using, guess what? Our heads a little more. We use our mouths a little bit more. I talked to someone in our church who just about this just a few weeks ago, and they told me how God has really demonstrated to them their need the move from doer to developer, and they're doing an incredible job. I had to tell them how awesome I thought they were doing. And you know, it's important that we understand that our bodies are dying, but our spirits are being renewed every day. Here's some questions we tend to ask about our body, or one question: how much of my life can I still control? Now, as we get older, there are pharmaceutical and personal care industries that have made a fortune, right, for this very question. What can I still control? I got to get grown-up diapers, you know? I got to get stuff to help me to, you know, if I'm going to be, you know, do all the stuff that I used to do when I was younger with my spouse, you know? And y'all know we got children's stuff, so if you bring them in here, that's your own risk, all right? But you know, how much can I still control? That's a big question that we have, this whole issue of independence, because our bodies are dying. But you know what? That energy is to be diverted to other outlets that are going to help us to do what? To invest in other people. One of the very first things we talked about when we first started this series, some ground rules about life, is that the measure of our life is the investment that we have in others. And I really believe that the 60s and the 70s and 80s is when this may play out more than at any other stage of life. Now the question, those of you who stood up in the first two groups, and I'm one of them, is to get us stopped long enough to listen to those people who stood up with the third group. You see my point? Many of us are like the college freshman who found himself at a football game sitting beside the older gentleman. And so he took it upon himself to lecture this particular senior citizen on why it was impossible for the older generation to understand his generation. And so this is what he said. "You grew up in a different world, actually an almost primitive one," the student said. He said it loud enough for many of those nearby to hear and to join into the conversation. "We," he said, "the young people of today, grew up with television, jet planes, space travel, men walking on the moon. Our spaceships have visited Mars. We have nuclear energy, electric and hydrogen cars, computers and light speed processing," and he kept on going. But finally, at this point, the senior was able to jump in. And he looked at him and he said, "You know, you're right, son. We didn't have those things when we were young. So we invented them." The key for many of us is going to be our willingness to stop and listen to those who God has placed around us to pour their lives into us. How are you going to respond? Well, the third category of questions, and it's not very fun, we're going to segue this into the next series some a little bit later into it as we talk about rewards and what heaven's going to be like, is death and dying. And this is the age at which we really begin thinking about that. In 2 Corinthians 4, chapter 17, "Our present troubles are quite small and won't last very long." And then in verse 18, "So we don't look at the troubles that we can see right now. Rather, we look forward to what we have not yet seen." You know, many of us, we dread death. We don't think about it. We hate the idea because even those people who claim to be Christ followers think that physical death is final. It is not. The physical death of someone's life that is really counted for God should, you know what? Should look more like what we've got here today. A party atmosphere with playing the kind of music that we played today than what we typically think of at a funeral. Now, death hurts. It does. But I began to understand that this summer with two funerals that I did, one for my father-in-law and one for a man named Bill Poland, that these funerals really should have been looking more like this, celebrations, than what we would have called funerals. And yet we still tend to look at death and dying in a very morbid way, even for those whose lives for Jesus have counted. What are some of the questions that come up during this time? Why this anger and irritability? That's one of the questions. Here's another one that is really prevalent during this time. Is God really there for me? Whoa, you know, I've been banking on this all my life. It better be true because you know what? The moment of truth is near. if it ain't right, I guess I've kind of really blown it. Here's another one. Am I ready to face death? When I die, how will it happen? How will it happen? Will I be missed, or will the news of my death be a relief? No, come on, but people think that in this age group. Heaven, what will it be like? Our lives are intended to be an investment. They're intended to be an investment. I want to go back and I want to just sort of give you, when we on March 11th begin this series, I want to share with you four rules of engagement that we said that day that are going, that kind of outline this whole thing. The first, the measure of your life is your investment in others. That's the first one. Secondly, life is about focus in the midst of distractions. Number three, life is lived not by a formula, but by faith. And number four, life is more about obedience than my ideas of success. And I really believe, folks, when we get to the 70s and the 80s, and we look back, we're going to realize more than ever that those four truths were really true. And the question is for us today, what are we going to do? What decisions are we going to make? What investments are we going to make today that are going to allow us, when we reach the 70s and 80s, to be excited about what is next? I know a couple of men, like I said, who performed ceremonies for this summer, who had reason to be excited about what was going to happen because of the way they invested their lives. Here's the point. The way you live your life is going to drive how you spend eternity. Now I want you to look at every surface in this room. Every surface. Walls, ceiling. Look around. This is not a trick question. All right. I'm not going to throw anything at you like Chuck did while you're looking away. All right. Every surface in this room. Okay, now what I want to do, I want to move everybody out, and I'm going to take one of you, and I'm going to blindfold you and kind of do a pin the tail on the donkey kind of thing, turn you around a few minutes and get you kind of dizzy, then say, all right, I'm going to give you a needle, a sewing needle, a little one, okay? And I want you to go take that sewing needle, and I want you to put a little indentation in one of these surfaces anywhere, okay? And then we're going to keep it on. We're going to bring you back to the middle and turn you around some more again. Okay? And then I'm going to say, okay, after we take the blindfold off, okay, go find that little indentation you made with the sewing needle. Now, if that were you that did that, how many of you think you could go find that indentation? Let me give you an example. In that illustration, proportionately, heaven, eternity, represents all the surface, represented by all the surfaces in this room. Wherever that little sewing needle point is, proportionately, represents this physical life. This 60, 70, 80, 90 years. Now here's the most ironic trick of it all. The choices you make, the investments that you make, the decisions you make inside that little sewing needle indentation are going to drive how you spend all the rest of your time on all the other surfaces, because that's eternity. That's the irony of it, isn't it? That 60, 70 years that can be illustrated by something that I could never even find, that is going to be the key to how I spend eternity. So here's the question. What are you doing inside the little sewing needle indentation to build your rewards that you're going to experience in heaven? Is salvation, asking Jesus to come into your heart one time, just enough for you? That may get you in if you're committed when you ask God to save you. But you know, there are different levels of rewards in heaven, and we'll go into that in the next series. And how you will spend it will be as a result of the legacy that you have laid out in this life. The final point that I want to leave with you, because legacy is what it's all about. Paul wrote this: "As for me, my life has already been poured out as an offering to God. The time of my death is near. I fought a good fight. I finished the race and I've remained faithful. And now the prize awaits me, the crown of righteousness that the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that great day of his return. And the prize is not just for me, but for all who eagerly look forward to his glorious return." Here's the final question that I want to haunt us this week. What have I done that will outlive me? What have I done that will outlive me? For many of us who are younger, we might ask the question, what will I do that will outlive me? Let's pray. Father God, the idea of mortality is sobering.